on the scheduled day are public hearings, possible work sessions, House Bill 2136, 2299, and 2300. We are in a subcommittee mode, and we can't take testimony, so I will open up a public hearing on House Bill 2136. Mr. Warner, do you want to give us some preliminary observations?
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair. This bill comes to us from the Department of Revenue, passed through the House Revenue Committee and on the floor of the House. With 55 I votes. What it does is amend the laws regarding the disclosure of taxpayer information. And Susan Browning has that information.
All right. Susan Browning?
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Susan Bunn with the Department of Revenue. House Bill 2136 really is simply clarification for the department. These are areas where we've had some confusion or some doubt, and our attorneys have counseled us that we really need to get clarification from you. So there are a variety of different issues, but we're just asking for you to clarify in statute how you want us to proceed on these. And I thought I handed out a little summary of the bill by section. In Section 1, I'll just launch right into it, it just clarifies the definition of what we call particulars, and this relates to disclosure. As you may recall, the department is specifically prohibited very strongly about disclosing any type of information, especially the particulars of a tax return. And it's not clear that such information includes not only income, but also items of expense, deduction, exclusion, or credit. So it's not clear that taxpayer identification numbers are clearly identified as being particulars of a return. So what Section 1 does basically is just expands and states that expense, deduction, exclusion, or credit, as well as employer identification number, are considered particulars of a return. So there's that piece of it. Section 2 clarifies that the department may lawfully disclose all types of taxpayer identification numbers, and this has come up because right now, under current law, we are authorized to disclose particulars of a tax return only in certain cases. And the particulars include, like, Social Security numbers and employer ID numbers. But there's some numbers, especially because of the federal IRS, they use what they call a TIN, essentially ID number, that's in place of a Social Security number. And we would consider that the same thing as a Social Security number and employer ID number, and have the authority to disclose it. We wanted to make sure that that was the case. So Section 2 just clarifies that any taxpayer identification number is considered a particular return that we could disclose, and it doesn't have to be specifically limited to Social Security number and employer ID number. Okay, so that's Section 2 of House Bill 2136. And Section 3, Section 3 came up about in discussion with our attorneys, that there are tax laws that affect the determination of Oregon taxable income that are outside Chapter 316. As a matter of fact, they're in several places. We first started listing all of them in Chapter 316, but our attorney said basically it is probably better just to reference in Section 3 that there are other laws of this state that are applicable to personal income taxation, so we can catch any other areas that are affected by this. And this really comes in with ORS 316.048, and that tells people how you, residents of Oregon, how you determine your federal taxable income. You adjust it by certain modifications that are in ORS Chapter 316. Well, actually, there's some others that aren't there, and that's how we got into this area. The people go to ORS Chapter 316 and expect to see all of them, and there's a few little pieces scattered around that aren't in Chapter 316. So as additions and changes are made. Actually, Dexter Johnson suggests we reword it as we have in Section 3. Okay? Section 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 are just taking that further and making the changes that deal with the a reference to ORS Chapter 316 and the other laws of the state applicable to personal income tax. So you can see where we basically just expanded it so people are not confused. That takes you through Section 8. And then the final, let's see, Section 9, the change begins at the top of page 8. Actually, it starts on the page 7. There's certain types of fringe benefits that aren't subject to tax for federal or state purposes. However, the current Oregon law defines the wages to include non-cash payments, including fringe benefits. So while they aren't taxable income, technically they're subject to withholding of tax. So the change in Section 9 changes that and states when the remuneration is exempt from taxation under this chapter, it's not required to have withholding on it, basically. And that seems reasonable. It seems like you shouldn't need to withhold if your amount is exempt from taxation. That just clarifies it. We do have people reading this very literally and concerned that that's what it's intended to mean. That's what a lot of these changes are through here, is we do deal with individuals who read things very literally, and we want to make sure that the statute's very clear and prescriptive for them as they go through. Section 10, the Department of Revenue does collect debt on behalf of other state agencies. If they wish our services, we may collect for them. And it's not entirely clear the department has authority to collect for what we call public corporations, for instance, State Accident Insurance Fund and Oregon Health Sciences University, in some cases Department of Corrections through their operations. We have been collecting this debt, so we wanted to clarify that that was what you wanted us to do and that we do have the authority to do that. So this is a clarification on Section 10 on page 8, on the line 16. So what we do here is we specifically provide that the department is authorized to collect this debt. We render assistance in the collection of any delinquent account owing to any state officer, board, commission, you can see that, Oregon Health Sciences University, or the State Accident Insurance Fund, or county community correction agencies that have entered into an intergovernmental agreement with the Department of Corrections. We want to clarify and see, we don't collect all of that, we only collect it if they, and this is the case with all of the state agencies, if they wish our services, we will provide that. Collection services. And then the final provision of House Bill 2136 is on page 9, and that's to catch a little glitch that we was accidentally caused last session. We're repeating obsolete language that accidentally got added back in again last session, so it should not be in there. It's a technical correction to take out some old language related to the depreciation piece that got added back in accidentally last session. So you can see from House Bill 2136 a lot of just minor clarifications, but that's very important to us, especially in the area of disclosure, because we do want to follow the letter of the law very, very closely on that because of the strict guidelines you've set out for us. So that's why we ask that you look at these and clarify them for us. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have on House Bill 2136.
Thank you. Are there questions? Senator Wild? No questions? Are you ready to go? In Section 10, the Health Sciences University and FAFE, those are changes they sought in order to clear up any misunderstandings they had, or?
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, no, these are changes that we sought. We like to have it very specifically outlined in the statute what you want us to do. And we were collecting for those agencies in the past when they were more traditional state agencies. But now that they've moved into public corporations, it's not clear the department that they are a collection of any delinquent account owing to any state officer, board, commission, corporation, institution, department, or other state organization. To us, it was not totally clear that those are state organizations, FAFE and OHSU, because they are a public corporation. We continued to collect their debt once they moved out from the umbrella of a state agency and become a public corporation. We wanted to clarify with you that you agreed with that action.
Question, Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Susan, does that include some of the other independent boards that we've established? We've sort of been going through this process of moving some out into independent status.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, if they're considered a state agency, I don't know if you have one specifically you're interested in or not, but we do collect four boards and commissions if they ask us to. Some of them.
I do remember the ones we just did a bill on that. I don't remember what they all are, but there's a lot of boards and commissions, Board of Accountancy.
That have, at this session, have become more of a, this is based on what we who we were dealing with before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They probably don't have the same issues. It'd be smaller, but.
Wait, we initially, Chair Miller and Senator Barr, we initially crafted this in such a way to say public corporations or something more inclusive. We thought it'd be more appropriate to come to you and ask what you thought as each of these come up, similar to what we've done with state accident insurance and OHSU as opposed to any public corporation. It could be quite a gamut there. So we thought probably it'd be more appropriate to talk with you about what you think our role is in collection of debt for those groups, because they're not really... They're not private, but they're not state. And these public corporations are something kind of different. So what do you see our role in collection of debt for them?
Does that apply to, like, the Scholarship Commission? I guess that's a state agency.
Mr. Chair, Senator Barr, Scholarship Commission is a state agency. Right. They also have a lot of their own collection staff that they deal with. We deal a lot with the smaller agencies, and we also do a lot of refund offset, where we offset refunds that you may have coming to you as from the personal income tax or... for debt with those other state agencies.
Further questions? Anyone else wishing to testify? Mr. Marquis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Marquis on behalf of the Oregon Collectors Association. We did not appear in the House on this bill because, frankly, we hadn't taken a position on the bill at the time of the hearing, and I did talk with the Department of Revenue and told them that I would not appear because we hadn't taken a position, but I would like to reserve the right to at least raise an issue with regard to Section 10 when the bill reached the Senate. So I did let them know. Our concern, I think, on behalf of the Oregon Collectors Association is simply that from a policy standpoint, whether the legislature wants the Department of Revenue to begin expanding its role as a collection agency into the more private sector or perhaps into collecting for local governments. What you've done, if you've had some state agencies come to you and request that they no longer be treated like a state agency, but rather become a public corporation. And so we've moved them out from the definition of state agency. Now the question is, do we move the line so that the Department of Revenue continues to do those collections, or more specifically, do we allow those public corporations access to the advantages of tax offset, those kinds of programs that are run by the Department of Revenue, where they can grab a refund that's owing to an individual or a business? And in addition to the SAFE and Oregon Health Science University, this amendment in Section 10 also includes county community corrections programs. We think this is a precedent that perhaps you're going to see more of if you adopt it. Revenue told you today they looked at maybe, having all public corporations under this. They chose not to this session, but I suspect that those licensing boards that are being moved to into privatizing will be back and say, well, we too would like to use the Department of Revenue and have advantage of the tax offset and those things. It's a policy consideration for your decision, and it's not going to be the end of the world one way or another, but I would tell you that there are lots of private collection agencies out there in the private sector ready and willing to do this work. And the question for you is, should government continue to do that once these people are no longer state agencies? With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 2136? If not, we'll close the work session. Excuse me, close the public hearing on House Bill 2136. Open a work session on House Bill 2136, just to get a sense of the numbers.
I might be, the last statements I think were correct, and as you know, last session I had a bill to privatize SAFE because I don't like this limbo band that they get to operate with. They get certain advantages from the state, and yet at the same time, supposedly they're on their own, which I don't believe they are.
I don't know what the best decision is. Clearly with OHSU, whenever they need money, we send it their way. So, I mean, boy, I know a lot of private corporations that would love to have that situation. And I know a lot of people here are eager to send the money their way, but I don't consider that private, but I don't consider them public at this point either.
Well, what I hear you saying is you'd like perhaps some additional time to think about the particular Senate or
election. That one time?
Yeah, that one line. We'll probably be here another few weeks, so we don't necessarily have
think so.
Position on this today.
Jeez, I have my tickets for Disneyland.
That's what I'm here. If that's all right with the committee, then we want to defer action on House Bill 2136 to a later date. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2136. And I'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 2299. Mr. Waters. 2299.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2299 was requested by the Oregon Tax Court. And what it does is it clarifies the applicability of certain statutes to the Magistrate Division and the Regular Division, respectively, of the Oregon Tax Court.
All right. And we have on House Bill 2299... Mr. Sedaris. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Scott Sedaris, presiding magistrate of the Oregon Tax Court. There's not a lot of subtlety to House Bill 2299. What you see is pretty much all there is. What happened is the Magistrate Division of the Oregon Tax Court was created by the 1995 legislature. It received funding for the 97-99 biennium. Calendar year 1998 was the first complete year of the court's operation. In the course of that year, we learned some things. We found some statutes that needed to be revised to make advice clearer to litigants as to where to appeal, as to how to appeal. We found some laws that could be changed to make the court work more cost-effectively. We've set those through. The litigants we've polled don't have any problems with the proposed changes. We've contacted various groups and they're in favor of them. We come before you asking that you pass us out of committee and let us do our good work.
Thank you. Are there questions? Is there anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 2299? You might as well just stay right there. If not, we'll close the public hearing, House Bill 2299. Open a work session on House Bill 2299. Thank you, Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House Bill 2299 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Weil, move House Bill 2299 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Byers?
Aye.
Senator Hartman, Senator
Clark. Aye.
Senator Weil.
Aye. House Bill 2299 is passed to the floor. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2299. Senator Weil, we appreciate your willingness to carry that bill. We'll now open up a public hearing on House Bill 2300. Mr. Waters?
Hey, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2300 was also brought forward as a request of the tax court. And what it does is extends the period for appealing tax assessments in certain cases and allows an appeal of a tax assessment to be filed within 2 years from the date that that tax is actually paid.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Sedaris?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Scott Sedaris. I'm presiding magistrate of the Oregon Tax Court. We're distributing some material to you that briefly summarizes this bill. And in this bill, we are asking the committee to make a policy choice. And
to give some background to the situation. The Department of Revenue will use the assessment process to collect tax, interest, and sometimes penalties from those who do not file their taxes or those who file a return and the agency has a disagreement with those individuals as to the amount owing. Now, individuals under the current system, of course, have a right to appeal the department's actions to the tax court. That right exists for a very limited period. The window is 90 days. The court does not have the discretion to extend that period beyond 90 days. In some individuals, 90 days perhaps is not enough. What will happen is we run into cases where, in fact, the taxpayer did not owe the amount assessed. That became very clear as a matter of fact. We've run into situations where the taxpayer did not have actual knowledge of the assessment. We've run into cases where the taxpayer had reasons that we would be inclined to agree with for not appealing within the 90 days, or if not agree with, perhaps understand. The court just has not had the ability to say, in your case, the 90-day rule does not apply. What House Bill 2300 does is it gives a second chance to this group. They would still have their 90 days, but they would also have the ability, should that 90 days come and go with no appeal, of paying the tax and then requesting a refund. The Department of Revenue could choose to give the refund or not. Should the Department of Revenue deny the refund, they would have the option of appealing to the tax court. This opportunity to appeal to the tax court presents them before an independent forum. This is a system followed by the federal government with the Internal Revenue Service and VAT mechanism. And so what brings us to you is we've written a series of decisions over the years that say this is a hard law, we must apply it. We just thought that for this session we would come to you and see if in fact that was the way you wanted the law to read.
Thank you. Mr. Sedaris, if I pay my tax, it's in dispute, the 90 days runs, and then I do as you suggest, and I still do pay up and file for a refund, what is the time frame for the Department of Revenue to respond to my request for a refund?
Oh, okay. The Department of Revenue would have within the 2 years to decide to pay the refund or deny it. But when they deny it, that's when you get your second 90-day window.
Okay. That's helpful. Are there other questions?
Mr. Chair. Well, then you are. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The appeal then is not to the magistrate division, but directly to the tax court.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, no, it would be first to the magistrate division. The individual would have the decision of the magistrate, and should either the taxpayer or the department be unhappy with the magistrate's decision, then there would be the opportunity to appeal to the higher forum, the regular division of the tax court.
Senator Wild?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious because when looking through the different parts of the statutes, one thing that strikes me is oftentimes when you get into revenue, that sort of thing, and other areas, it doesn't have what other parts have, which is the understanding that statute of limitations runs at a time when a reasonable person in the community knew or should have known. And that doesn't appear through any of this other part because, as you suggested, if I was completely unaware or if I were completely unaware of this, because of some mix-up or something else sent to the wrong property owner, that sort of thing. Under the wording, I've lost my chance, but with the wording I just suggested, I would not have lost my chance. And I'm just surprised that in this part of law, we never get around to that kind of wording, and I'd just like your input on that.
Okay. Senator Miller, Senator Wild, my thoughts on the reasonableness of the tax code, both internally and how it relates to our everyday life, are many. The best that I think we can hope for in this particular case is is not perhaps to make it reasonable, but at least to make it consistent with what the federal government does. And so at least if we make the changes set out in House Bill 2300, the state of Oregon is doing the same thing the Internal Revenue Service does. At least then there's one set of rules that we all have to have in mind.
I suppose that's the best we can hope for in this world. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Thank you, Mr. Sedaris. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2300? If not, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2300. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2300. Vice Chair Wild.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I state the 2300 to floor to pass recommendation.
Senator Wild moves House Bill 2300 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Reichman. Senator Starr.
Aye.
Senator Byer.
Aye.
Aye.
Vote aye. House Bill 2300 is passed to the floor. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2300. Senator Hartung will carry. Had that done to me in the preceding committee.
It was a good bill.
It's a good bill. Anything further to come before the committee? If not, we are adjourned.